If Saracens are to go on and win a third successive European Rugby Champions Cup, they'll first have to overcome the competition's form team.
Now there we go, final whistle here in Montpellier, and Leinster have secured an away win in France, and they have completed their pool with six straight victories, and now they know that they go into the quarterfinals in Dublin with a top seeding.
As well as the massive clash between Leinster and Saracens, there's another huge quarterfinal in Ireland as three times winners Toulon take on Munster, who have won two European Cup titles themselves. There's an all-French encounter as Clermont Auvergne hosts Racing 92, and Scarlets fly the flag for Wales against a La Rochelle side that have made the last eight in their debut Champions Cup season. We'll speak to Dennis Hickey, Will Fraser and Florent Rossigneux, and hear from Leon Lloyd as we preview the four quarterfinals. Saracen skipper Brad Barrett goes under the microscope in our Champions Cup Q&A, and there are memories of the very first European Cup final from Thomas Castagnier. Plus David Humphreys, Conrad Smith and Stefan Armitage look ahead to a big weekend in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. That's all to come on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Well, welcome to our quarterfinal preview. It's James Burridge alongside ChampionsCupRugby.com's Emma Thurston and Tom May, once of Toulon, Northampton, Newcastle and England. Guys, great to see you all again. January was the last time we met. What's changed, do you think, in the European climate of rugby right now? How have our quarterfinalists changed in that time, Tom?
Well, I think firstly, with an Irish head on, you've got to say that Irish rugby is on the up. Look at the Six Nations. You look at how the players are playing their individual performances. They're certainly on the front foot. I would say the English side and their Saracens, they're just about crawling back into form. The French teams are really up against it, though. They've been struggling.
Yeah, four French teams, two Irish, one English, one Welsh. And yet two of those French sides, Emma, are going to be playing each other. Clermont, they finished second, didn't they? But they're miles adrift in the top 14. Just because they've reached the quarterfinals doesn't necessarily say they're in the best of form.
And their match at the weekend showed that against Toulon. It was a terrible result. They didn't put any points on the board. So they're not quite in the form that they were this time last year, for example. And it'd be interesting to see if they can actually raise it up a notch for this huge knockout game.
So just to run you through where everybody finished, top of the seedings was Leinster, then Clermont, Munster, Scarlets, La Rochelle, and then the three pool runners-up in Toulon, Racing 92 and Saracens. Tom, was there a game for you, certainly maybe in January, which stood out the most?
Well, I think that Scarlets-Toulon game, with the amount of pressure on both sides to get that job done. You know, it was a great fixture, a great result for them. I think Saracens having stuffed Northampton, I mean, that was okay. It was against Northampton that didn't really have anything to play for, but actually they made sure that they got through, you know, and that was a pretty key performance for them.
So let's get a view on that quarterfinal lineup from the European Cup winner Leon Lloyd.
There's only one English team in there, which just goes to show how strong the other club competitions are. The French have gone in force, and you've got the Celtic teams as well. I think Leinster look a very strong side, finishing top seeds. It's tough, you know, home, when you get to these stages, everyone fights really hard to get a home quarterfinal, and the rest can be said from that. If you look at the teams that are playing at home, it's difficult to look past those teams going through, but it's knockout rugby. You do everything you can to get those stages, and on that day, any team can win. And it's 80 minutes, so I can see the nerves that can be around the teams there. And if you're going to win it, you're going to have to play against the best teams. So whether you're playing them home or away, you're going to have to go and do it. So it's an exciting eight that are left. I don't think I even can pick the semis. I definitely couldn't pick a winner out of those. So, which is a testament to how well the competition's gone and how strong the teams are that are left in.
Leon Lloyd, of course, who scored two tries as Leicester Tigers beat Stade Francais 34-30 in that 2001 final. So some of you have stuck your neck out a little further than Leon. We asked you ahead of the show which team has the best chance of progressing into the semi-finals and why. And Emma, I mean, social media is telling us in bucket loads, isn't it?
Absolutely. Lots of different opinions. Rex Rutland on Facebook, he says there's always a surprise in this round. At least one home team will lose. And Garrett's opinion on it. Away wins for La Rochelle, who'll have too much up front against Scarlets, and for Toulon, as Munster are hammered with injuries. Two home wins on the Sunday, Leinster to win the Champions Cup. So keep your thoughts coming in throughout the week across our social platforms. We're at Champions Cup on Twitter and European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook. And then for all things Challenge Cup related, it's at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter and European Rugby Challenge Cup on Facebook. And there's a few stats as well for you ahead of the weekend's knockout matches. The clubs in this season's quarterfinals have 13 European titles between them, and historically home clubs have a 77% success rate at quarter-final stage, so we'll see.
We're definitely going to dwell on that in the discussion to come. Next, we'll preview that quarter-final weekend in the European Rugby Champions Cup.
I'm Ken Owens and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Well, we're going to start with the last game of the quarter-final weekend because it's just so intriguing. And David Humphreys agrees.
To me, the fixture that stands out more than anything else is Leinster against Saracens. I'd probably put it as simply as whoever wins that quarter-final, I believe, will go on to win the competition. Saracens at this minute in time, when you see the number of players they had in the Lions, the number of players they have playing for England, they're outstanding team, been very successful the last few years. But again, Leinster, when you look at the success and the level of performance that they've had, I think it's an impossible game to call. I think obviously Leinster having home advantage is a factor, but Saracens have shown time and time again, playing home or away makes no difference to the way they play. And look, it's the one more than anything else that I'm looking forward to seeing.
So it's Easter Sunday for Leinster, seeded one after six wins out of six in the pool stage against the holders Saracens, who, let's be honest, have had a mixed European season so far. And Tom May, so much has been said about the conditions of both these two teams, the debate about how much rugby they've played, whether they're tired physically, emotionally, mentally. Mark McCall said something interesting this week. He said it's very easy to freshen players up. What's your take on this whole debate?
It is if you give him a week off.
Well, not all of them have they? Mauro Itoje was playing.
Yeah, and look at his performance. He was absolutely outstanding against Harlequins at the London Stadium. So, you know, there is this whole thing about, you know, players being tired and overworked and the number of games they play compared to the Irish players. And I know from looking at social media that a lot of the Irish guys have been away on holiday and getting their feet up, which, you know, rightly so. But I think there's a mental side to it from a player's perspective where you just have to sort yourself out, look forward to the next couple of games. There's no doubt that Mauro Itoje will have a rest at some point, but there's some big games to come and they always want to play in those.
But in all these players' cases, is it a workload issue or is it just a amount of games issue?
I think workload across the clubs is pretty similar. I think that was one of the things I think that gets to you as you get a bit older as a player in that you know exactly what's going to be coming week in, week out. And actually through my career, training never really varied that much from club to club. The workload didn't really vary that much. I just think some players play a bit more than others and some teams play in club matches or European matches that are that much closer to being at test level. So if you do test level all the time, week on week, then it does become a lot harder.
So will it make a difference from a club's perspective, Tom, in terms of Leinster having not played their internationals at the weekend, or not all of them anyway, versus Saracens guys coming back in and having a game under their belt altogether?
I think it's an interesting scenario because obviously Ireland won the Six Nations and they're on a high. So they've now, you know, gone away. They've had some time off. The guys that have come back in for Saracens will be chomping at the bit because they'd be so disappointed to have finished that international competition the way they did. And you can see that in terms of Mauro Itoje's performance. He looked like a different player, you know, that we'd seen over the past 5 weeks.
But that's tactics then, isn't it?
That's tactics. And does it say something about the environment that England have? But that's another issue. You know, I think he'll be looking forward to, you know, getting an opportunity to do one over an Irish side in the Aviva Stadium. You know, whatever's gone in the past, there's enough players that are playing in that Leinster side that he'll want to make a mark on.
Owen Farrell, there's a big doubt over his availability this weekend. Lozowski's waiting. I'm sure he wants to prove himself. He'd have no bigger stage.
Not a bad replacement to
have.
But
he's not Owen Farrell. And everyone would have relished that Farrell-Sexton matchup again, that revenge moment. How big a loss would Farrell be?
I think he'd be a big loss to any side. But I think if any team has the ability to have someone step into his shoes and fill them pretty well, then that's Alex Lozowski and that's Saracens. There's enough experience around him, inside him in Wigglesworth and outside him in Barrett and Bosch, that you've got players to sort of help him through. And you know, there's a decent player there. That's not saying he needs help through. He's an England standard player. He's an international player. And he has the ability to step up and make a difference in this quarterfinal.
We're going to be hearing from plenty of people on the podcast. First up, it's Will Fraser, Champions Cup winner with Sarries in 2016. Will, great to have you on the pod.
Thank you very much. How are you guys?
All good. So, come on then. If Owen Farrell doesn't play and Lozowski takes his place, I mean, that's a real... I know he's a proven performer, but it's a different stage, surely, when you're going to somewhere like Dublin to play Leinster.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of those ones where, obviously, you know, Owen, one of the best players in the world, you're going to want him playing. But I think if he doesn't quite make it in Loz, we've got someone that, as you guys are just saying, he's an international-level player. He brings some other aspects to the game that work well with us, and with Wiggy at scrum half as well to, you know, help out in that department. Then I don't think it's slightly different than Owen, but it's not like we're sort of racking our brains thinking, oh Christ, what are we going to do? But obviously with Owen there, you know he's one of the best players in the world, so obviously you want him to be fit.
So you're Mark McCall this week. Where are you going to target Leinster? Where are they weak?
Good question. Well, look, I mean, to be honest, I don't think you wouldn't really say any part of the game is necessarily weak. I think it's one of those matches when you get to this stage in Europe, it's entirely looking at your own game. I think it's very much what they'll be talking about this week is making sure that what we do well, we make sure we do it as best as possible come Sunday. So making sure, you know, our defence is where it needs to be, that we're ruthless and we execute well in attack. And then obviously, you know, against any Irish side, your set piece has to be massive, and Leinster will be the exact same. So we've got to make sure scrum, line out, more time, that's all at the top of our game. And then really it's just seeing how the game sort of pans out. But I don't think any part of Leinster game is really weak, especially this year. I mean, this year they've been phenomenal.
Will, it's Tom here.
Hey, Tom.
Just looking back to that sort of tough time that Saracens had mid-season, yeah. What do you think the club has done and maybe the coaches specifically to turn that around?
So I actually went in on... lingering as much as I can around the club. I was in the team meeting after the thumping from Clermont, and it was actually really interesting because obviously there were some technical bits with the rugby that needed fixing, but actually what they spoke about is the rugby wasn't the fundamental reason why we sort of gone through that patch. It was what they were talking about is very much sort of we've gone away from what's given us all this success to begin with, which is actually focusing on the group and focusing on the players, not as players, but as people and those memories and relationships and all that kind of stuff. So actually, I think it's just been more of an emphasis been put back onto the cultural side of things, making sure that we're still socialising with each other and getting to know each other as best as possible. And then that then lends itself to all those tiny little processes in the rugby and then being able to fix things on the pitch much quicker.
And well, we've been discussing the build into a quarter final. As a player, did you prefer to have a relatively comfortable encounter the game before, or one where you had to navigate your way through a few bumps in the road to get the result anyway?
Yeah, I've never really thought about it, to be honest. I think, with both cases, if you have a good game the weekend before and you play well, obviously it gives you that confidence going in, but then equally, the game on the weekend wasn't a thriller by any stretch of the imagination. So having bits to work on and players coming back in also gives you that bit of confidence in training, because, you know, you pick up something from the weekend that's not gone right, and then in training it suddenly works like clockwork. That equally almost will give you more confidence because you've problem solved, you've sorted it out, and then you take that into the game. So, yeah, it's a difficult one, to be honest. I think as long as you're going with a win, I think regardless of it, because winning ugly also gives you good confidence. You think if we can win a game playing how we did, then if we get everything right, then hopefully things should go a lot easier.
Give us an idea of just what Mark McCall might actually be doing with his team this week, because you'd think he might not actually do an awful lot. He'll be saving the bodies for that real cauldron of the Aviva.
Yeah, I think it's very much what Sarries always, the club always been very good at is managing the players in terms of the loads they have during the week and not just as a, you know, generic, the whole group. It's very much done on an individual basis. So it won't be a light week, especially going into Europe. You know, it's always quite an intense build up before a big European game, especially a quarter final. To be honest with you, most boys will want to train. They'll want to get out there and want to, you know, put things right from the weekend. But it's very much managed on an individual basis.
Well, great to have you on the pod as ever. And fingers crossed for Saracens from your perspective this weekend.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's hope for a good win.
Cheers, Will.
Cheers, guys.
Tom May, I can't quite believe I'm about to say this question, but Saracens will probably see this see them as underdogs, and yet they're the defending champions.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? I don't actually think Saracens played as badly as Will made out there. I think at the weekend, you know, they've come back in from having, their squad sort of blown apart for the past 5 weeks. So I think that, you know, there's a, you know, bit of form coming into this game. But also, they've got the lowest load of training out of the whole Premiership. And I know that from chatting to different players and, you know, being around one or two of the clubs. And they don't train anywhere near as much as some of the other teams. So, you know, when you're talking about load and training load, I would think they probably train less than Leinster anyway. And then when you've got the sort of tactical nous that some of these players have, the professionalism that they have, you add that to the mix and suddenly you've got a pretty potent mix in terms of getting performance out of tired players, if they are tired. Everyone's saying they are, but none of the players have said they are.
They'll never admit it, though, either, will they? That's the thing, Emma. I mean, all that's been said, you'll never get a player to talk publicly and say, yeah, do you know what? I've been tired, and I've been tired for about the best part of a month. I'm emotionally drained. They're not going to talk about things like that ahead of a quarter-final against Leinster in Dublin.
No, of course not, because A, they won't want their opponents hearing that, and B, also, I think there will be a factor of mind over matter for a particular player. They'll be working their way through. I don't think any player is ever fresh during the season. Am I right in saying that, Tom?
I wasn't.
He was never fresh. Do me a favour.
I look like I've been dragged for a hedge.
How many years did you play professional rugby?
About 19.
Right, in all honesty... I'm going to ask them a hilarious question. When were you freshest?
Week one, year one. No, I don't think you ever go into a game when you're 100% fit. You've always got some sort of niggle and you're managing some sort of injury. You know, some of these players, you look at them, you think the tape budget for that squad must be enormous, the amount of strapping.
We'll look at Tua Lange at Leicester over the weekend.
No, it's frightening. What you can do about it, I'm not sure there is a huge amount you can do about it. The game is what it is and you know, it's being managed as best we can. But there's one thing to say, and that this weekend you've got two massive teams that have got some almost test match quality about them that are going head to head.
Delighted to say that Dennis Hickey joins us on the pod, once a great winger for Leinster, Ireland and the Lions. Dennis, great to have you on again.
Thanks very much, good to be here.
Dennis then, Leinster, some of their key players have been rested for this weekend. Leo Cullen, Stuart Lancaster, they know how important a quarter-final in Europe is and what it means.
Yeah, very much so. Like Leinster are lucky at the moment, they've got a very strong squad and they were always likely not to play their kind of Six Nations players, certainly the frontline Six Nations players, the players who played the majority of the tournament. So it's matters also outside their hands. This is, I suppose, where Irish rugby is slightly unique when compared to English rugby and French rugby, for example, is that the IRFU is the one employer and they're very actively involved in determining when the Irish players play or not. And having a week to rest after the Six Nations campaign would have been slated from a long time ago. So I think Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster would have planned not to have them. It's good because the players get to rest. The flip side is, of course, you know, Leinster will take the field next week, not really having played together in this group, certainly with the majority of the Six Nations players back since January.
Dennis, Tom, mate, what do you think Stuart Lancaster's brought to the squad from his coaching perspective? You know, how has he made such a big difference? Or has he made a big difference?
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I think Stuart Lancaster has enjoyed being in Ireland because he's been maybe able to get back into the nitty-gritty of just coaching as opposed to the head coach role. And certainly the head coach role for England is a multifunctional role whereby there's very little coaching, a lot of management of the press, management of players, but not as much hands-on coaching that I think a person or persona like Stuart Lancaster is comfortable doing. So it gave him a chance to kind of step away from England and come over here and maybe with a little less spotlight on and just focus on the nuts and bolts. And I think I've spoken to a couple of players who have in and around the squad and currently, certainly the younger players, he's focused a lot on developing the younger players. And you to understand really where Leinster were at that time, Leo Cullen a couple of years ago got the job with Gervin Dempsey, a former teammate of mine and somebody you would have played against yourself, Tom, many times. And they were seen as maybe the future of Leinster coaching, but didn't have huge amounts of experience. To be able to bring in a guy like Stuart, I think it gave them two things. First of all, it gave them the experience that he had had throughout the levels. And also, it gave them a chance maybe to bring in somebody, kind of very senior voice, who they could be not only a coaching soundboard, but also then act as someone who could take on specific duties in and around skills and defence. It's worked for both because Leinster have got that someone who has that gravitas and that experience, and Stuart Lancaster has got, you know, a pure coaching job where he doesn't have to have the headaches of being the number one in charge and all that goes with it.
From an Irish perspective, from Leinster's perspective, Do you think they're looking at Saracens and that they have lost this aura of invincibility?
Well, you know, I'm not speaking clearly on behalf of the squad, but just on the outside, you know, you see a Saracens team that maybe this year hasn't fired as well as it did, you know, the previous two seasons. That said, you know, they come in with the mantle of being the back-to-back champions. And, you know, looking at the quarterfinal draw, I think the one team that Leinster wouldn't have wanted to have drawn is Saracens. It's less probably a reflection on how well maybe they were playing coming into Christmas versus just the calibre of the team and the players that they have. And knowing that post the Six Nations, where a lot of their senior players would have been probably playing and performing well for the national side, they come back with a lot more confidence, which is, I think, is the position they're in now. You know, they had a good win at the weekend, and I think they may not have had the season they've had in previous seasons, but they're still an incredibly strong side with an incredibly strong squad, and play a game that will be difficult for Leinster to beat.
And Dennis, just turning our attentions to Thomond Park and Munster's quarterfinal against Toulon, obviously two familiar faces at this stage in the competition. How do you see that one taking shape?
Well, I think it's a difficult one. I was talking to someone about this today. On one hand, you've got Toulon, who are an incredibly strong side. And you speak the knock-on effect of the international season. Guys like Bastro, Kranduk have really benefited, I think, from the Six Nations. Then you've got Nanu, Radra, all these guys who are playing week in, week out, kind of coming back together. You know, we know exactly what you're going to get from Toulon. I think the fact that they've got some of their key men firing will make them incredibly dangerous. They certainly have the 23 to go the distance in a quarterfinal, and I'm not surprised they're in this stage of the competition. The flip side is that Munster are incredibly hard to beat in Thomond Park, and it's probably worth 10 points to them just playing at home. They're very, very difficult, and they will fight to the end to preserve their home record in Europe, which is, you know, amongst the best, if not the best, in history of European rugby. Unfortunately, they kind of come in with some key injuries, particularly in the backs. The loss of Keith Earls in particular is huge. He's a real leader for them in the team. And their backs, Simon Debo's, of course, has, you know, kind of shunned from the Irish side, but has continued to play very well for Munster. You know, Debo and Earls play very well together. And then Chris Farrell, who played so well in his debut Six Nations match against Scotland, also out. So take those two key players out of any team that's struggling. I think Munster don't have probably the strength and depth in the backs in particular that maybe certainly Toulon will have. The flip side is, of course, they have packed in Conor Murray pulling the strings, and any team with Conor Murray playing is going to be a strong side because he's just in such incredible form at the moment. And the pack will be very strong or pretty close to where they need it to be. So they'll be very tight defensively. They'll be happy to get into hand-to-hand combat in Thomond Park. And if it's a close game, you know, it's very hard to eke out a win. If Munster can keep the scoreboard close, which I believe they will, then they grow stronger and stronger as you get to the end of the pitch. And, you know, getting a home quarterfinal for them is such a boost. So Toulon have the firepower, they have the players, they have the calibre, but they probably won't have faced a fixture like this in quite a while, and that's why it's so intriguing.
Absolutely right. Nothing quite like Thomond Park. Dennis, thanks very much for coming on the pod.
No problem. Anytime.
Dennis Secchi there, formerly of Leinster and Ireland. So, social media, Emma. I mean, which team has the best chance of progressing into the semi-finals and why? That was the question we asked, and plenty of responses.
It was indeed. Hugh McCall on Facebook says Leinster, because they really have the best system and depth of great players. And then James Tanner and Kevin, they had a little discussion about it between themselves. James said, Saracens to find some form and surprise Leinster is a distinct possibility. The England boys will be looking to put a disappointing Six Nations behind them and throw down a huge marker in Dublin. But Kevin replied with, not a chance, fella. Leinster far too strong. And James wanted to obviously have the last word. Saracens aren't exactly weak, though, are they? A couple of first-choice players missing, but you don't win back-to-back European Cups without strength in depth. So we'll leave those two to discuss that one between them and just throw a little statistic into the mix. And from a Leinster perspective, they progressed into the knockout stage as top seeds, as we all know. They finished with 27 match points, which is the highest tally that they've recorded from the pool stage. But here's the bit that they will be looking to change this weekend. In European Cup history, only one top-ranked club following the pool stage has gone on to win the tournament in the same season. And that club is their quarterfinal opponents, Saracens, in 2016.
It kicks off at 3:30 British summer time. That's 4:30 Central European time on Sunday, the 1st of April. Leinster against Saracens at the Aviva on BT Sport 2 and BN Sports. Tom May, I mean, We heard that stat, didn't we, from Emma at the beginning of the pod. 77% of home sides win these quarterfinals. And frankly, you'd be a brave person to bet against that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I'm brave.
How brave?
Well, Rex Rutland said that someone's going to lose at home, and I think this could be one of those games. I'll stick my neck out. I'm normally quite good at just sitting slightly heavier on one side of the fence. Yeah, I'm going to go with Saracens winning away for this one.
Ooh, I'm going to go with Leinster at home. I think there will be an away win, but I don't think it'll be at the Aviva.
Well, on to Munster now against Toulon. That takes place on Saturday, the 31st of March. Munster won Pool 4, remember? Toulon were edged into second by Scarlets in Pool 5. Both these teams have won 4 of their 6 Champions Cup matches so far this season. And Emma, Munster, well, they're the benchmark team in the Champions Cup.
Well, we'll give you a few stats and let you make up your minds. Munster are through to the knockout stage for a 17th time. They hold the record for the most quarterfinal wins as well, 12 in total. And in their previous 9 home quarterfinals, they've lost just once, and that was back in 2012 against Ulster. But as Dennis mentioned, their injury list is a lot longer than they'd like. Keith Earls, Tommy O'Donnell, Duncan Williams, Tyler Blaendell, Chris Farrell, Chris Kalite and Yako Taito. I've said that last
excellent
one wrong,
pronunciation.
Sorry.
We're lucky we've got Tom's obviously with us today, and he's a former Toulon player, and we'll come on to them in a moment. But just on that injury list, particularly Keith Earls, Tom, because he had a sensational Six Nations for Ireland. He is the heartbeat of that Munster back line, and he is going to be hugely missed, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a fantastic player, and it's nothing to do with my stature, but I love watching little players play rugby. And he's one of those guys that in a game that it can be full of monsters, he can really change a game. And he's tiny when you compare him to the other guys. But his contributions around the field, they're big, big playmaking moments. He understands and reads the game brilliantly. And his pace and footwork, you know, been around for a long time, and it seems to be getting better and better. So, you know, from an injury perspective, they will miss him. That's going to be one slight drawback for Munster, but, you know, they've got a lot of players to rely on.
And Emma, it's the first test for Johan van Graan, really, isn't it? I mean, this is a guy who's only 4 months into the role as director of rugby at Munster. I think this is his 14th game. A guy who loves to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning, unlike Tom May, who's still having his coffee at 11. Yeah, he really is. He's from the Eddie Jones mould, isn't he? And Heineken Mayer, these bosses who get up at ridiculous hours of the day, but they want to start fresh and with a sense of purpose.
They do, and it goes to show the work that goes into being a head coach, a director of rugby at this level. I find him a very astute operator. You saw in his post-match interview at the weekend, their last domestic game, there was a steely look in his eyes that said, I'm ready for this week and my players are too. He knows that he's got injuries. There are question marks over Simon Zebo and Andrew Conway's fitness as well at the beginning of the week. So there are plenty of hurdles for them to face, but he'll be set for this and looking forward to it.
So to Toulon then, Tom, give us an insight as to what you make of their change, their turnaround, because back in January and when we were talking about this in December, there were question marks about Toulon, but Fabien Galthié has really got them clicking now. Ashton scoring tries for fun, 21 in the top 14. You've got Fekitoa, Bastereau, Nonu to choose from as your centre partnership. He's got an embarrassment of riches, hasn't he, really?
He has, yeah. And I think as long as Toulon can get on the front foot, then they'll have something to say about this game away at Toman Park. That could be a second away win, perhaps. Girardeau, I think, is really important for Toulon when he plays. But you know, they've got some big back rows. That the back five in that pack are so powerful that they can make a big difference. It's interesting who they go for at 9. I think, you know, they've got obviously some French players in there that they can choose to pick. Mathewson's been playing well for them there at 9. I know some of the supporters over there are pretty surprised he hasn't started the last couple of games. But they have the ability to just implode when you look at the names you just rattled off. And I think the most important is Semi Radradra that you've missed out there. I think he's been unbelievable for Toulon this year. And I would say 18 out of Chris Ashton's 21 tries has just been running off the shoulder of him, whether he's playing on the wing or whether he's playing outside centre. They've got an embarrassment of riches out wide, but they need to get them good, quick ball to try and expose the space that Munster might leave in defence.
And you mentioned their back three obviously being very potent. We've got a new face within Toulon as well, Malachi Fekitoa. So he signed a 2-year deal from the Highlanders and he's one of their additional players. So between the end of the pool stage and the quarterfinals in the Champions and the Challenge Cup, teams can nominate up to 3 players to be registered to supplement their squads, and he's one of Toulon's. along with Dave Attwood,
you can read my mind, Emma, because Attwood was the next person I was going to talk about, because everyone knows about what skills they've got on the back line, Tom, but this is fundamentally going to potentially come down to a battle of the pack, a battle of the set piece. And Attwood, what have you made of the difference he's made since he's joined Toulon?
I think he's just enjoying playing, isn't he? You know, he's playing in a pretty nice part of the world as well, which always makes a difference. But, you know, I think he spent a long time on that sort of physio bed and he just wants to get back to playing. And what an opportunity for him to almost, I mean, the fact that he has gone out on loan, it was a bit mind-boggling anyway for me. I don't quite get that. If you're going to lend him out on loan to Toulon and they're going to play him, why wouldn't you pick him in your own side? But, you know, I think he's enjoyed a good run of games now for Toulon and he's looking sharp. So Fekitoa is key for Toulon. He's been outstanding. Two tries at the weekend, just gone. Okay, they dismantled Clermont fairly embarrassingly from a Clermont perspective, but you know he's really added something. And you know, do you go for Bastereau and Fekitoa or Nono and Bastereau? You know, it's an interesting mix.
Toman Park is unlike many other stadiums, though. Is there from your experience, the top 14? Is there a stadium in France that compares with such an intimidating atmosphere for Toulon?
Stade Mayol. It's slightly different because it's obviously their own stadium. A few years ago, the Stade Marcel Michelin was very similar. Quite intimidating to go into, people banging on the side of your bus, you're pulling up at the stadium, things like that. And I don't know, I just get the feeling that if Toulon turn up and are really focused on the job at hand, they could get this one away.
Dennis was saying Toman Park adds 10 points to Munster. Will Toulon have the nous, have the know-how to navigate through the Toman Park factor and the team that's in front of them?
I mean, they can do. Ultimately, I think it's how they're managed. And that key position at nine, balance that with 10, do they go with Below or do they go with Tranduc? That game management is really key, especially at someone like Toman Park, where you just want to try and quieten it down as much as you can. You know, it's all very easy to rely on those guys outside you, but actually those guys have got to put their hand up and say, right, we're going to put this team in the right areas of the field and apply pressure to Munster.
And the interesting thing about Ashton is he's playing from fullback and he's scoring...
And he kicks like my grandma.
Well, that's irrelevant. He's scoring tries, 21 tries in the top 14, and he was never really played at fullback in England ever.
No, and I just think it allows him that sort of roaming ability that he's unbelievable at. We've seen him do it for so many years. He's almost quite restricted on how he can do it from the wing, even though he wasn't outstanding.
He's got to choose his moments, though, hasn't he? Because turnover ball quickly, he'll get thumped back and there won't be anyone at home.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one area that perhaps Munster will look to try and expose him. Can he get out of position from a defensive perspective when he doesn't have the ball? What's his positioning like? What's his reading of the game like from fullback? He's a good player. He understands the game. So he'll be performing well this weekend, no doubt. But that may well be, in a game of fine margins, that might be something that Munster are looking at.
So Saturday, the 31st of March, 3:15 kickoff British summertime, 4:15 Central European time for Munster against Toulon, Toman Park on Sky Sports Action and Sky Sports main event, Efforder and BeIN Sports. Predictions, Emma?
A Toulon away win. It's a big call, but I think if they run hot, they'll find a way.
Tom?
I'm going to agree with her. Toulon away win.
You said at the start we were only going to have one, but now you've gone with two.
I've changed my mind. I've convinced myself.
Yeah, you have, haven't you? I'm not sure you've convinced the rest of us. Right, later in the programme, we have got a Champions Cup Q&A with Brad Barrett, Thomas Castagnier's memories of winning the first European Cup final. There's a Challenge Cup preview where you'll hear from Stefan Armitage, amongst others. And there's fantasy rugby, Tom May gloating like you've never heard him before. But next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll look forward to two more crucial Champions Cup quarterfinals.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston.
Next, let's discuss that all-French quarterfinal on Easter Sunday, the 1st of April, between the Pool 1 winners and last season's finalists, Clermont Auvergne, and the Pool 4 runners-up, Racing 92. Let's start with how Clermont are going to react, Tom, from their absolute thumping against Toulon. Their heads just weren't there, were they?
No, I think, you know, they've given up the ghost with the top 14. I think one positive for them was getting Lopez back on the field. He spent the last 20 minutes on the pitch at Stade Mayol, and they've been desperately missing, you know, someone in that position. They've called on the likes of Luke McAllister to come in, and it hasn't quite worked for them. And they're still in ninth in the top 14 and struggling. So they need to turn things around quickly against Racing, who at times can be disappointing. But they're certainly playing far, far better than Clermont right now.
Well, that's the point, Emma, because Clermont have never lost a quarterfinal at home. So you have to bear that in mind, particularly they're playing at as intimidating places go. We think this place, we think the Marcel Michelin is an intimidating place to play. Racing away, have they got the mental nous to win games as big as this? Because like Clermont, in the past, they haven't shown it.
To be honest, we'll only find that out at the weekend. It's a big question mark, but they will see a weakness with Clermont Auvergne's recent performances. On the flip side to that, we could see a totally different Clermont Auvergne this weekend, and I hope we do, because the one against Toulon wasn't really there. And then it becomes a case of who manages the occasion best, because Clermont still remain the bridesmaids in this competition. And as difficult as their top 14 season has been, the burn to win the Champions Cup should be as strong as ever.
Well, let's talk to a former Racing 92 flanker, friend of the pod, Florent Rossignol. Florent, good to have you on.
Good to be here, yeah.
I don't have too much sympathy because I hear you're in the Caribbean at the moment.
But yeah, I'm doing a bit of a coaching with Philippe Saint-André. We're having a bit of a workout out there. As long as I know it sounds really tough, but
what a tough gig. You
know, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. Well, next time, there's three of us here who fancy a lift in your luggage. Let's talk about this match then, because Racing, Emma talks about Clermont being the bridesmaids. What does that make Racing?
Well, I think the difficulty with Racing is they haven't found its consistency. I mean, if you look at their level, you know, they're still not firing up all cylinders. However, they are the best defense in a top 14 at the moment. So they've got some weapons for this game, but I think they might be not mentally that strong away from home still. Huh? And we know Clermont, you know, see everybody read about, you know, that 49-0 defeat down in Toulon. But I think Clermont last weekend was already on the quarterfinal mode, you know, for the big weekend in the European Champions Cup. So I think it's going to be very tough for Racing this week to play away from home against probably a Clermont team, which, as we know as well, not doing too well in the top 14, which probably going to transfer all their kind of hope of, you know, salvation of the season, if you want, with a quarterfinal and probably the targeting to be a European champion this year.
Florent, do you think the guys that missed out on some of that French rugby, Vakatawa and Teddy Thomas, do you think they'll be adding something to Racing this weekend? And just on Clermont, do you think it was all about injuries that led to their form and their dip in form?
Oh, there was a lot of that, yeah. I mean, we looked at the injury list of Clermont, and the injuries coming back will make definitely a big difference. For Racing, yeah, I think those guys are very good individual players. And I don't think, you know, when you're at that stage of the competition, you can just rely on your individual players, you know, Thomas and all that. They can score five, we know that, but they have to play as a team more than ever to pass this round, I think.
And what of La Rochelle, Florent? I mean, they are the worst seen as the dark horses. I think they feel lucky to have made the quarterfinals, to be honest, because it was touch and go for them. And Scarlets will be licking their lips.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, La Rochelle, as we talked about in the last podcast, I think La Rochelle was a dark horse. I think they were firing up all cylinders since then. I mean, they dropped a little bit in the league. I think they lost a few injuries, few players. They're coming back. They're not sure of the form they are. I mean, they're still a worthy fifth in the top 14. But I think, you know, the squad is not that big. I think they might be, you know, at that stage of the season, you know, they could have done with a couple of more, maybe three or four more big players in their squad to sustain the momentum they had in January. And I think they're going to find it hard as well against Scarlett, which, you know, is one of the back line in Europe, which are playing well at the moment.
Well, Florent, great to have you on the pod, and enjoy those cocktails with Philippe Saint-André.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Florent. Florent Rossignol, back on the pod, the former Racing 92 flanker. Now, on social media, Emma, we've been asking which teams we think the punters have the best chance of progressing into the semis and why.
Yeah, and Kieran's perspective on Facebook, he sort of said this particular game between Clermont and Racing is the tight one to call. He says everyone's writing Racing off against Clermont, but I don't think Clermont are anywhere near where they were last year. And obviously last year, Clermont had Toulon in a quarterfinal. They won that and they went and played Leinster in the semis. So, as you said earlier, James, they've never lost a quarterfinal at home, but we've just discussed their form. This one could be a bit of a challenge. So make sure that you keep your thoughts coming on social media. Just to remind you, it's at Champions Cup and at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter. Or if you prefer Facebook, it's European Rugby Champions Cup and European Rugby Challenge Cup.
And the match is on Sunday, the 1st of April. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff, British summertime. That's Clermont, that's Racing 92, that's at the Stade Marcel Michelin on BeIN Sports and Sky Sports Action. Tom, are you going for another away win here?
You'd think so, but no, I'm not. I think there's a real lack of system from Racing at times. The times I've seen them play this season, I can't quite understand what they're trying to do. I don't know quite whether they're going to pick Patrick Lambie or Dan Carter even at 10 this week, which could be interesting. I just think Clermont they've almost shut the doors on the top 14, and Europe has now become their prime focus. And for that reason, I am going to go for a home win at the Stade Marcel Michelin.
I'm going to agree with Tom. I think we'll see a different Clermont this weekend.
Right, our final game to preview is actually the first of the weekend. The quarterfinals start on Good Friday, the 30th of March, with Scarlets against La Rochelle in Clonethly. And Scarlets into the knockout stage for the first time since 2007. And Emma, that's probably why this match has been a big draw for rugby fans in Wales.
Definitely. The match sold out within an hour and there was fans queuing from 6 o'clock in the morning to get tickets. Parky Scarlets has been made bigger in terms of its capacity. It's going to be over 15,000 fans there, and also across all of our quarterfinals, you've got 45,000 tickets that have been sold at the Aviva Stadium. Tokeman Park is a sellout as well. The Stade Marcel Michelin, I doubt there'll be too many seats there, and it follows on from fantastic attendances in the pool stages. Combined between the Champions and the Challenge Cup, a 1.2 million attendance. So it's great to see so many people loving European rugby, and on the field, it's certainly delivered as well.
And Tom, when you consider the history that Scarlets have with this competition, they've had their hearts broken by Paul Grayson and Tim Stimpson down the years, and kicks which really just stuck a dagger in the heart of any Scarlets fan. And last season domestically, they won the biggest domestic competition for them. This is the next step up. Can they crack it?
I think they can crack this weekend. I'm just not quite sure whether they've got the capacity to go on and win this Champions Cup competition. I think they're moving in the right directions. The style of play they have is exciting to watch. But if you watch their game against Munster, they started brilliantly and they were sort of running Munster ragged at times. But actually, that's sort of the way that Munster clawed their way back into
the set piece, wasn't it? They were blown away in the set piece.
And these areas, you can only have an expansive game if you can back it up with a plan B, and you can really try and stop teams that will try and stop you in those areas. So,
will Ken Owens make a difference? Will Rob Evans make a difference in the pack? These kind of players coming in, John Barkley, do they make a difference?
Yeah, they will make a difference. And they have to make a difference against the La Rochelle side. They will want to run the ball as much as they do. But La Rochelle have got some interesting players up front. I think the likes of Danny Prizo, that it's in that pack, he's a prop that can probably run as quickly as any centre and knock people over and use his footwork. So, he's got a complete all-round game. To start the weekend off, I think it's the greatest way that the European Champions Cup could start this week, with Scarlets against La Rochelle.
The thing is, Emma, from a La Rochelle perspective, Ryan Lamb has come out and said, there isn't a plan B. It's non-stop. It's running rugby. That's what we do. And if Scarlets can tap into that and really ask questions, I think that's where they came unstuck, certainly at Wasps, and they almost came unstuck at home against Harlequins in the last pool game.
I think Scarlets need to have learnt their lessons from that game with Munster at the weekend and make sure that they don't do the same thing twice, because as Tom said, they were phenomenal for 20 minutes. I mean, the tempo that they were playing at and the type of rugby that they were playing is why there are so many fans going to Parky Scarlets, so many of us talking about them with their impressive rugby, but they need to make sure that they put La Rochelle off their stride. And both of these sides, I don't think, can go at each other with the same type of games. One of them needs to have that, but have something in reserve.
This stage of the competition, there's a dangerous thing for Lamy to say in that there's no plan B, because teams will go, all right, OK, so we'll just starve you of any ball and slow any ball that you have right back down.
Which is kind of what Wasps did, and then they took their chances when they were afforded to them.
You want to keep all those... If you've only got one plan, you just don't tell anyone that you don't have any plan B. Just keep it to yourself.
But it's exhausting, because if you want to starve your opponents a ball, then you've got to be pretty darn confident that you can keep it.
Yeah, as much as you want to play an expansive style of rugby, it's dangerous, because if you get isolated at breakdowns, if you make line breaks and then don't get the support to the breakdown, you'll get turned over, and then turnover ball is the quickest and best way to try and start an attack. So look, this is going to be an outstanding fixture to watch. Both sides will just chuck everything at this. I would think it comes down to who will run out of puffs first.
And do you think, the breakdown, we always know in matches like this, can have a profound difference. A lot's been said about the way referees are interpreting the breakdown laws at the moment. In Europe, have you noticed any difference between the ways certain referees from different countries are interpreting the breakdown?
I think there's always different interpretations, no matter which referee you have and which competition. But as players, you need to adapt to what's being played on a specific day in a specific situation. We've seen club sides, European sides, international sides not having the ability to do that, and that's where you come unstuck. Rugby is about wanting to get your game plan into play. It's about wanting to try and stop the opposition position, but it's also about adapting to what's in front of you. And this whole thing of, you know, the phrase of playing what's in front of you is fine, but actually it's adapting to what's in front of you. It's, you know, managing the breakdown, it's managing the referee, understanding how the referee is interpreting something and the what he's letting you get away with and what you can get away with. You know, and it's all those different sort of variables that you have to assess in game.
And Emma, the fans have been talking a lot about this one because I think they know this could be the most entertaining. And yet I remember that first game where Scarlets, or one of the first games, Scarlets, they hosted Bath, didn't they? And the conditions were not right and they got outthought. And I just wonder if that will play in the back of their minds as well, that if history is going to repeat itself, they've got to learn the lessons.
They do have to learn it, recent and past lessons, as you say. I hope that the weather is a little bit better than that fixture against Bath. It was torrential rain, so fingers crossed it's a dry night. We have a nice fast track, and then we'll all be able to see the type of game that we want. And as you say, James, social media is alight with this one. Quite a few individuals actually talking to us about La Rochelle, including Gregory, Ben and Ross, and they're all pointing towards a rare away win in this quarter-final. Gregory, he's called La Rochelle the French Exeter Chiefs. Ben tips them to win the whole competition, which would be some feat in their first season. And Ross simply says, the rugby we play is a joy to watch. Bottia is the warhorse that will lead us to glory. And equally, the support for Scarlets on Twitter is very, very strong. I was having a look today. They've got a hashtag, which is Turn Twitter Scarlet, and there's Scarlet cupcakes, there's gifts galore. So I think that one's going to build during the week. So there'll be plenty of discussion about this as we get closer, and perhaps a few Joshua Parker bits thrown in as well with that going on in Wales this weekend too.
So it's Friday the 30th of March. It's a 5:30 kickoff, British summer time, 6:30 Central European time. That's Scarlets La Rochelle at the Parky Scarlets, BT Sport 2 and BN Sports. Tom May, come on. Surely you've got to go home here.
Home win. I think La Rochelle, you know, if they'd been performing the way they were at the start of the season and they had a bit of a slump in the top 14, I think that's going to translate into their performance here in Europe. I think they could struggle against a Scarlet side. They need to plug together more than 20 minutes. And I think that Munster game last weekend will probably give them enough of a kick at the backside to make it a really good Friday.
Oh, that was a nice little...
Until he messed it up, yeah.
You must have been reading what I'd written down, Tom, because I think exactly the same.
Couldn't read it, that's why I messed it up.
Home victory.
Right, don't forget to check out the quarterfinal highlights via championscuprugby.com and the EPCR's social media channels. We'll hear from Saracens captain Brad Barrett and France legend Thomas Castagnier in a few minutes' time. But next, we'll look at the four quarterfinals in the European Rugby Challenge Cup.
I'm Jason Eden, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
So we've already talked through the Champions Cup quarterfinals. Now we can focus on the last eight in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Friday the 30th of March, it's your old boys, Tom, Newcastle against Brive. And you were up in Newcastle for the Northampton game in the Premiership, and they really did expand the kind of the brand, if you like, of Newcastle Falcons to a wider audience, and they could do so again if they get to the final of this competition.
Yeah, it was amazing to see, you know, 30,000 people, and the weather helped. It's about the first time in early March that it's been over 10 degrees. But, you know, it was a great turnout. It wasn't the greatest game, but they do have players up their sleeve that can pull something out of nowhere. You know, Gonover and Sinotti, the fact that, you know, they've re-signed is a massive statement for Newcastle. And they try to play with that width. You know, Dave Walder's a complete Newcastle United nut and really sort of wants to go down as one of those sort of entertainers style teams, you know, Kevin Keegan-esque.
You just wonder if Eddie Jones is looking at someone like Dave Walder now.
You know, I lobbed it out on Twitter the other day, just wanted to get my mate a job. But, you know, I think he's up there. You know, I think he's a young English coach. His ability and his tactical nous across all sports help him as a coach. And I think he's adding something massive to Newcastle. Brief, struggling a bit in the top 14, trying to desperately to avoid the drop. So will their focus be more on their home domestic competition? That is the question. But Newcastle, you know, they've played a lot of games against Brief in this competition over the years, and they're two sides that know each other pretty well. I just think, you know, for Newcastle, it's a great opportunity for them to progress to a semi.
And Emma, if you're a Newcastle coach and Dean Richards or Dave Walder, you're looking at this and thinking, we have the potential to be a top four in the Premiership, and we also have the potential to make the last stages of a big European competition. they wouldn't have thought this was possible, but equally, do they have the resources to cope?
Well, I think they're showing that they do. At the start of the season, when they crept up in the upper echelons of the Premiership, people questioned whether they'd be there for perhaps a week or two. They're consistently there now, and I think you look at their pool stage campaign in the Challenge Cup as well, and the wins that they put on the board, the platform that they've got going into this quarterfinal, and then the route that they could potentially take to the final. Yes, they do have the resources, I think, and they're going strong.
Next to Pau against Stade Francais, let's get a view from two Pau players who've already faced Stade twice in the top 14 this season, Conrad Smith and first Stefan Armitage.
We've got to pay them back because they came in and beat us at our ground, so always hurts when you lose at home, and to have them again, it's up to us now to put things right. And we're on good form at the moment, and we want to keep that going. And Stade France at home, we want to give it to all our supporters that here's a fortress, and that's what we want it to be. We want people to be scared to come here, and that's what we try and do week in, week out at home.
They're probably a wee way off the top six, so for them it's all or nothing. So it's an opportunity for them to get something from the season. For us, you know, we might have both options open to us, but it's something we're pretty desperate for. It's new for us, so you know there'll be a lot riding on the game. And you know, from my experience, European games, I don't know, you seem to play a bit more and you just want to win. There's not that fear of losing and relegation that you have in the top 14. So hopefully it makes for, you know, a competitive game, but also quite an open game. And Stade Francais are a good side, they can really play. So, hope that's the case.
Conrad Smith and Stefan Armitage. It's amazing you're even saying those players' names playing in France. And equally, we had your old friend Carl Heyman, Tom, on the pod, one of our previous podcasts. And the guys alluded to it then. I wonder how much defence is going to be all that big a deal in this match, because both teams just want to throw it around and enjoy themselves, don't they?
They do want to play. And I think Pau, they've struggled over the past couple of weeks, but you know they went on a bit of a run, and they got up to third or fourth in the top 14 at one point. They're doing something right down there in the southwest of France. Stade Francais, oh wow, they are in free fall in the top 14. There's 3 points that cover the bottom four in the domestic competition, and the history of that club just won't allow them to go down. So I wonder whether their focus now shifts from the Champions Cup and where their minds will be, because where their minds will be, because they have to stay in their domestic competition, and these two sides beat each other away from home. I think this will be a home win.
Right, that's Friday done. Saturday, the 1st of April, Connacht against Gloucester. Here's the Gloucester director of rugby, David Humphreys.
Connacht away is not really, it's not one you'd choose. They're formidable at home. They've over the last couple of years, starting with the change that Pat Lam made, they've become very, very difficult to play against. Home or away, we found that, I think it was two or three years ago, we played them in King's home in the quarterfinal. It went to extra time. So, listen, we know how difficult it's going to be. But the Challenge Cup is a competition that we set out at the start of the year we want to win. We have disappointed with our defeat at home to Pau in the final game, which cost us a home quarterfinal. But we know that if we put our best team out in the pitch, if we go and play to our best, we'll give Connacht a good game and can win the game.
And so much was expected, Emma, of Gloucester. Johan Ackermann came in and he got them going, and then they just went off form, and slowly but surely they're beginning to get it back. And again, I wonder where it falls for them, because they're chasing the top four in the Premiership, and you just wonder where they really are focused the most.
I think they'll want to focus on this game, having won the competition before and the Challenge Cup winner getting a spot into the Champions Cup. I think they'll potentially see that route through. From a Gloucester perspective, I always find it quite difficult to hang my hat on their away form. It'll be interesting to see.
Connacht, Tom, from your perspective, I mean, they've got a massive chance here.
Massive chance, and it is a horrendous place to go and play away from home. Some tough conditions always over there in Connacht, and, you know, OK, they might be struggling in their home competition, and they lost at home to Glasgow, so maybe that's something for Gloucester to be focusing on, but there's no doubt that Connacht will fancy this one.
And the final match, Edinburgh against Cardiff. Well, Richard Cockerill has been doing some fabulous things with Edinburgh over the past, nine months or so now, and do you think he will be the difference? It's just that different understanding and perspective and experience, which in a quarter-final is invaluable.
Yeah, two sides that are playing pretty well. I think Richard Cockerill's been doing a fantastic job. You know, I think there were some pretty harsh words when he first arrived, but they're starting to make a difference now in Edinburgh. And, you know, some of the results they've been pulling together have put them into playoff position, I think, in the Pro 14. So, but they're coming up against Cardiff, who'll equally be delighted to have a crack. And, you know, that should be a great game, that one.
Right, back to the Champions Cup and another quick-fire Q&A. This time, it's with the man who hopes to lift the trophy for a third year in a row, Saracen skipper Brad Barrett.
Describe yourself in three words.
Family man, competitive, caring.
Which luxury item would you want if you were stranded on a desert island?
I mean, it's probably the obvious one, an iPhone. Hopefully there's some 4G signal and you can FaceTime family and friends.
And which teammate would you want with you on the island?
Probably Chris Wiles. He's obviously my roommate at Saracens. He's become very accustomed to running my bath, making me tea. So it's obviously a great hand to have around the island to look after me.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Bobby Skinstad told me as a young kid, he lived by the mantra of DBTH, it's don't believe the hype. I think in every career you're going to have highs and lows, and your ability to stay level-headed and grounded is as important as any of the success along the way.
Which non-rugby sports star would you want on your team?
I think LeBron James would be a pretty perfect rugby player. I think he'd play in any position. So, yeah, we'd love to see what he could do with the oval ball. Potentially at number 8, in the centres or in the wing, I think he'd be a phenomenal addition to rugby.
Who inspired you growing up as a rugby player?
Growing up, my sporting probably idol was Andre Agassi. Had a big sort of tennis background, but obviously I loved his competitiveness, his fighting streak on the court. And then having grown up in South Africa, a guy I really respected as a player and captain was a guy called Gary Tashman. And also as a centre, Jeremy Guscott.
What would your job be if you weren't a rugby player?
Having recently completed my master's in business, that's probably where the future lies for me. So even in private equity or property.
Which European match would you want to play again?
I think some of the fondest memories I have in European rugby, potentially the final in Lyon from 2 seasons ago. Having been so close with the club in previous years to finally get over the line in terms of winning the cup was an immense feeling for the whole squad. And then in an individual game 2 seasons previous, we played Clermont to Twickenham in a semi-final, which was obviously just a fantastic brand of rugby we played, and we scored some fantastic tries on the day.
Tom May, don't believe the hype. We've been saying that about your game for years, didn't we?
Don't know.
I never listened to you.
DBTH, I love it. Right, we're going to talk about fantasy rugby next on the EPCR European Rugby Show. We're going to be swapping reality for something which I'm finding incredibly embarrassing.
I'm Issa Nasiwa, and I'll be playing fantasy rugby on championscuprugby.com.
Yes, time to check on our fantasy rugby performance. I say our. I think it's much better that we just focus on Tom's. I have agreed with Emma that I am going to make sweeping wholesale changes. Emma, I think you need to explain the rules to people because they still have an opportunity to play, first of all.
Absolutely. So it's at championscuprugby.com is where you want to go. It's championscupfantasy.epcrugby.com. Type that into your browser. So the classic fantasy rugby, you've got unlimited changes to play with, James. So if you wanted to change your entire team, as you sound like
which
you
I will
do,
be doing.
You can do that. You have a 100 million euro budget to work in, and clearly you'll be selecting 15 players. So the full point scoring system is available at the official Champions Cup Rugby website if you want to have a little look through.
I've got it all wrong now. I've run out of money.
I've only got two
players left, yeah. So, you know, I had my whole back three's had to go after the round stages.
Because you can't afford them?
No, because they're not playing. And I'm going to have a reshuffle, but I'm pretty keen to get Chris Ashton in, I think. So, but he is expensive.
How much is Chris Ashton?
9 million.
Well, he is the all-time leading try scorer in the competition. And as you said,
he's
21
about 3
tries
million
this season,
more than anyone else.
I think he'd be worth it, though, if he gets a hat-trick at the weekend, you know.
To be honest, Burridge, you need him in your team. You might as well just have the cheapest players around apart from him.
Well, I was going to say, have you favoured the pack or your back line? I mean, I know you're...
I'm just going for quality everywhere.
No, come on, you can't do that.
No, I have.
This,
The ones I have changed in, I'm keeping Bottia.
Yeah,
he's my secret
shout.
Weapon. Victor Vito's staying in. Buying in a Nakarawa's staying in. Fekitoa will be in. Ashton, I'm going to try and get in.
Do you have an average player? And I don't mean that in a rude way, but do you have a player who isn't worth 10 million?
He's not going to say anyone's average, is he?
My most average player is Owen Farrell. That's how good my
team
is.
How much is Owen Farrell?
He's pretty expensive.
As you can tell, his
computer's
been playing...
not working.
he's been playing on.
There he is. No.
He's, oh, he's 10 million quid.
So he's more than quid.
Euros,
he's more than Ashton.
Yeah, but he's.
How can you afford all these players?
Tom's got a secret stash of money that he's got
a loan
into.
From
he's
the
got the cheat code.
If you're that good at it, you get extra money.
He's got a loan from the bank manager. Emma, there's also daily fantasy rugby as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is just live for one match day. It's a bit of a lighter version, so it might suit you, James. You have seven players and you have to see the most prolific scorers on that match day. You've got no restrictions or budget limit, so it's a little bit simpler to put your team together.
That's another reason why it might suit him.
Points scored by your captain are doubled, and you have a designated goal kicker as well. So, as an example, the matches on Sunday, Clermont Auvergne, Racing 92, Leinster and Saracens. I've got my players here, which I'm looking at. Johnny Sexton as my captain because his points are doubled. Owen Farrell, he's my kicker, so his conversions and penalties count. Tadhg Furlong and Leone Nakarara, tries from forwards get you more points than tries from backs. Liam Williams and Teddy Thomas, because I think Thomas will have a point to prove, and Williams is in good try-scoring form. And Jamie George, because he's another forward that loves a try.
Which is a decent team.
I thought so.
Unlike yours.
DBTH, don't believe the hype. There's a new EPCR fantasy app that makes it easier to play both the classic fantasy rugby and the daily fantasy rugby games across the Champions and Challenge Cup competitions. It's available in English and French via Apple's App Store and Google Play for Android.
I'm Gregor Townsend and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
It's James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston with you on the EPCR European Rugby Show. And a reminder now to vote for your EPCR Player of the Year. Players from eight different clubs and all three European professional leagues are among the 15 nominees for the EPCR European Player of the Year 2018 award presented by Turkish Airlines. And there are four from Leinster: Scott Fardy, Tadhg Furlong, Ethan Athewa and Johnny Sexton. La Rochelle's eye-catching Champions Cup debut has earned nominations for Lavani Bottia, Danny Prizo and Victor Vito. There's also the Clermont Auvergne pair of Morgan Parra and Alvaretti Raka, plus Tadhg Byrne and Gareth Davis of the Scarlets. Now, last year's winner, Owen Farrell of Saracens, is included once again. And there are nods too for Conor Murray of Munster, Leone Nakarara of Racing 92 and Josia Tuisova of Toulon. That is a pretty strong list, Tom May.
It's a very strong list. And, you know, I think the guys that are getting in with an opportunity are the ones that are progressing in the competition. Raka did brilliantly, didn't he, in the round stages, but, you know, he's not going to be doing
anything
else.
Well, we haven't seen him since.
No, I'm going to stick with my favourite of Lavani Bottia and say that he might come up trumps this year.
Yeah, 15 nominees worthy of your vote, but who to choose? Here's the view of the three times Champions Cup winner, Stefan Armitage.
I got two guys. One's actually a really good friend of mine, Joshua Tuisova, because I think without him at the beginning, I don't think Toulon would be where they are. Because he always gets them on the front foot. You know, when you need that explosion, just that one break, sometimes he's always there. Whether it's in defence or in attack, he's always there. And obviously it's another guy who's played the same position as me, Lavani Bottia. I think he's an animal. I think what he's done this season in the back row, whether it's in back row or centre, I think it's been amazing. So, yeah, if I had to pick, it would be one of those two. I think they both deserve it.
So, Emma, how can we vote?
Voting is open now on championscuprugby.com, and fans that do vote are going to be in the running to win two VIP tickets to the Challenge Cup and the Champions Cup finals in Bilbao with one night's accommodation courtesy of EPCR. So this list will be reduced to five players following the Champions Cup semi-finals, and that's going to be by a combination of the public vote and the verdict of our panel of esteemed judges.
Yes, and then voting will reopen with the winner of the 2018 award announced after the Champions Cup final on Saturday, the 12th of May. Now, as we build towards finals weekend on the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll hear from some of those who've already experienced the joy of victory in the Champions Cup showpiece. And we'll start with a former Toulouse star, Thomas Castagnier's memories of the very first European Cup final.
When we played in the competition in 96, we won the French Championship twice in a row, 94-95. When you win, you always want to win more. And to be able to participate to this first European Cup, where when it was a time where the TV rights were not, you know, as as strong as it is now. We knew the players, but we didn't know them really well. We had some videos, but to go and play, you know, in different countries, especially for me as a young player, was really amazing. And then to play in the final in the Arms Park. I grew up with my dad showing me some videos of Barry John, Gareth Edwards, Phil Bennett. So I always thought that the Welsh rugby was really the best, most entertaining rugby, you know, in the world. So this game was unbelievable, and to win there, you know, and come back with the trophy was really amazing. When we played with Toulouse, it was about enjoying yourself, play what you see. And the confidence between the players around you, you know, was really strong. We knew that every time we made a mistake, we had a player who could help us. I would not have changed one of my teammates, you know, against any other ones. So it was a special time, and but we knew that playing in Cardiff against Cardiff in the final was going to be a tremendous challenge, and we managed to win it. So I think we were really lucky because this Cardiff team was really good. But on that day, I think the desire was really strong in our team. I don't think I played any games before going to extra time. It was just okay. Well, it was just a bit of fun again, you know. And it's the kind of game that you never wanted to finish. And to be honest, we should have shared the trophy with the other guys.
And that was a memorable final, Tom. There have been so many. I think, from my perspective, looking back, I think it was, talking of Leinster again, it was Sexton's turnaround. It was that Leinster turnaround at the then Millennium Stadium against Northampton.
Yeah, that was an amazing game to watch. And, you know, so many great memories from so many years in this competition. I think this weekend has got a big part to play in what's going to be a massive Champions Cup this season as well.
Right, before we go, a reminder of what you can see across a wonderful weekend of Champions Cup rugby on the 30th and 31st of March and the 1st of April.
Friday.
The quarterfinals kick off at 5:30 in Wales with Scarlets against La Rochelle.
Find out which team has a good Friday by watching the match on BT Sport 2 or BN Sports.
Saturday.
Five European Cup titles between them. Munster host Toulon at Thomond Park in the first of two quarterfinals on Irish soil.
Kickoff is at 3:15 local time, and you can see it on Sky Sports Action and Sky Sports main event, FR Dur or BN Sports.
Sunday.
At 2 o'clock Central European time, there's an all-French clash at the Stade Marcel Michelin as Clément Auvergne take on Racing 92.
It's BN Sports and Sky Sports Action for that one.
Then it's the standout team from the pool stage against the side that's trying to win the Champions Cup for the third year on the trot. It's Leinster Rugby against Saracens at the Aviva Stadium.
It's a 3:30 kickoff in Dublin for this enthralling encounter, and you can watch it on BT Sport 2 and BN Sports.
And that's your weekend sorted. Four massive matches in the quarterfinals of the European Rugby Champions Cup. And staying with TV, there's been some very significant announcements over the past week about where you can watch the Champions Cup in the years ahead, Emma.
Very exciting times, yes. So in the UK, Champions Cup rugby is going to make a return to free-to-air television, and that's going to be on Channel 4. This deal runs until the 2021-22 season, and it's going to be one live game during the Champions Cup pool stage, plus one live match from each of the knockout rounds. And in Ireland, there's a similar deal with additional rights gained by TV3. Once again, this is through until the 2021-22 season with the same format, one live match during the rounds and a live match from each of the knockout stages.
And there's going to be a similar deal for the Champions Cup in the US too, isn't there?
There is. So NBC have secured the rights for the Champions Cup with European Cup winner Dan Lyle and the excellent Alex Corbisiero driving rugby over there. Champions Cup rugby will be broadcast on NBC or NBCSN or online via NBC Sports through until 2021-22.
Back to the social media, because we asked you to let us know which team you thought had the best chance of progressing into the semi-finals and why. And Emma, you've got more replies.
I do. So Ian Turvey on Facebook, looks like four home wins for me. All sides very strong at home. And Sam, he agreed with that as well. Home wins, and I can see Leinster lifting the cup. There's a similar theme from Hugh, who says his heart says Scarlets to win the competition. His head says Leinster, and he's firmly in the home camp as well. And finally, Andy, who thinks La Rochelle will disrupt the apple cart and and deliver the only away victory of the weekend. So tough calls to be made all round, and those are the views of people on Facebook.
Yes, thanks very much for getting in touch with all your views so far. It doesn't just stop here. Keep them coming over the next few days ahead of the quarterfinals, which start on Friday night. Our next episode will be a preview of the semi-finals. Semi-final one, Leinster or Saracens against Scarlets or La Rochelle. Semi-final two, Munster or Toulon against Clermont or Racing 92. And those semis will be played at venues designated by the EPCR. But you can find out all the permutations as to which clubs would have home country advantage at championscuprugby.com. Now, Tom, earlier you predicted Saracens against Scarlets, Toulon against Clermont. You changed your mind?
No. Next question. No, next question. I'm going to stick with that. I think the one I'm least confident about is probably the Leinster-Saracens game. I think it's going to be tight. The one I'm most sure about will be Scarlets against La Rochelle.
Of these four teams, you look at someone like Saracens, you just sense their season, not just Europe, hangs on this performance, because they need to prove a lot, not just to themselves, but to the whole of Europe.
I think if they can get through this game, then it will kickstart their season fairly late on, but in a really important time in the season. It's a tough game for them, clearly, but one they'll be relishing the chance of getting their teeth stuck into.
Tom, Emma, thanks very much indeed. That's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Thanks to Dennis, Will and Florent. And don't miss those four huge quarterfinals in the European Rugby Champions Cup. One each on the Friday the 30th and Saturday the 31st of March. Then the doubleheader on Sunday the 1st of April. Go to championscuprugby.com for all the news and stats, match highlights, and to play fantasy rugby. And keep socialising with us and each other at Champions Cup and at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter, or via the European Rugby Champions Cup and European Rugby Challenge Cup Facebook pages. Our next episode will be available on Tuesday, April the 17th, ahead of those semi-finals. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston, and myself, James Burridge, enjoy the rugby.